Walter's going to speak on step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we've tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks, Walt.
Father, use me as an instrument of your mercy and your peace so I may help someone in the room tonight, and by doing so, help myself to stay sober another day. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Walt. Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for putting up with me for 7 weeks here. And, I'm sure I've said plenty of controversial things and things that might have ruffled a couple people's feathers. And I hope I did that. Okay? I hope I did that. Because when I come out here, I hope I make you think. Because all of us have our preconceived notions of what Alcoholics Anonymous is and what it isn't. And sometimes we forget a little bit about who we really are. You know? We can forget about that. It's just like, it's funny. I talk about this little part-time job I have now. I've done it a couple times. But a couple weeks ago, one of the regional managers asked me, well, how many new accounts have you opened? And I looked at him and I said, 0.0. I said, I never was tasked to do that. He said, well, starting next week, you're going to be tasked to do that. Okay. So I kind of figured out some things the first week, and this week I opened 3 new accounts for him. You see, I sometimes forget who I am. I'm a professionally trained salesperson for 30 years, you know. I mean, I'm very good at what I do, and sometimes you forget about that. Because, you know, I retired 12 years ago, and I haven't done it for a long time. You know? So in Alcoholics Anonymous, as we get some years under our belt, we can forget who we are. We can forget what we did, what we owe. You know, I was talking to somebody a minute before the meeting, and you know, the guy was a newer guy in the fellowship, and he said, it amazes me that somebody with your time has the type of passion that you have for AA. And I said, no, it doesn't amaze me at all. All I got to do is look back at my life and say, this is what AA did for me. How much do I owe for that? What debt do I have to show up and pay? You see? What debt do my children have to pay? You see? It's amazing to me. This life I get excited about. So we've kind of talked about the 12 steps, right? And in the first step we said, boy, I can't just stop drinking because I want to stop drinking, right? We have this weird mental twist that once we quit comes on and we're powerless over that first drink. You see? And every time we take that drink, we get unmanageable. And in the second step we said, boy, when we're unmanageable and we're doing all that stuff, we're nuts. We act in crazy ways. Drunken behavior is not great. You see, and in the third step, you kind of have to look at, man, because most people when they come to AA, most people, now, not me of course, but most people when they come to AA, they don't like sobriety. They think sobriety is like the worst thing that could ever happen to them. Because when you get sober, your world is so insane around you. Your bills are behind, your life is trashed. And you're going to come to this place where these people are all smiling and they got clean eyes and they all drive newer cars and all their utilities are on at the same time. You see? And you start to see that by the time you get to the second step and you start to say, well, maybe if they're not that way anymore, maybe this God, this thing might work for me. You see, and then you don't tell them you got that fourth step right there. Okay? You know, and you do the 4 columns of the 4 step, the real quick version. The first column is, who are you pissed off at? What are you pissed off about? What kind of fear caused you to be mad? And the 4th column, what part did I play in it? The infamous 4th column. The most important thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion. If you miss the 4th column, you're in for a lot of suffering. A lot of suffering, because you won't look at your part. Because in the 4th column, you should start to build a relationship with God And you should also start to build a relationship with yourself to find out what are your chosen ideals. Now, what are my chosen ideals for you? Now, what are your parents' chosen ideals for you? But who did God make you to be? You see, and as we start to look at what our part was, we can start to say, well, if I did that and it's uncomfortable, what can I do instead? And you start to choose some different ideals and put them in place. And then in the sixth and seventh step, you start to see the difference of where your actions are in your chosen ideals. You see? And we got to take those to God. And in the eighth step, we go back to that fourth step and we say, okay, who will we harm? And then we got to do some more work and find out who we harmed. It's maybe not on our fourth step. Because maybe we harmed people we weren't mad at. God forbid. I know I wasn't very vengeful. You know, and then the ninth step, we got to go out and we got to make the world right so we can walk free. We don't want to be walking through the grocery store and having to be ducking somebody just because we're uncomfortable. That's not good for our sobriety. And every time we put those little daggers in our soul, we get further away from God. Because every time you hit that little dagger in your soul, it's kind of like this concrete-coated marshmallow thing that I got, you know? I had to make that exterior so hard because I was always stabbing my conscience. Always. Consistently. You know, and then the 10th step, we say, boy, how's God doing today? Because I can't change my behavior a whole lot. Maybe a little here and there, some planning. But I sure can't handle the results of my life. I'm going to let God do that. You know, my sponsor always told me, do the footwork and let God handle the results. So I got to look at the 10th step and say, okay, where can I plan better? How can I keep myself out of certain situations? And how can I do better in life? Where could I have helped? I didn't. Those kind of things. You know, and then the 11th step. And really coming to know what God is to me. Because this is the journey to get to the 12th step where we have that spiritual awakening. You notice the word's different than in the book where it says spiritual experience, right? And there's a difference between the two. We all had plenty of spiritual experiences when we were out there drinking, believe me. You know? God help me with this. God, I'll never do it again. God this, God that. Those are experiences. Those are moments where you were reaching out to God, to something, because you felt so hopeless. See, an awakening, to me, is to understand what my soul is. And to understand that God talks to me through my soul. And then when I wear the world like a loose garment, my soul can really tell me how to live. Because I'll know what's comfortable for me. Not comfortable for you, but comfortable for me. And this awakened spirit to understand what your chosen ideals are and what your values are and what's acceptable to you. That's a scary thing for most people. Most people aren't willing to go there. Because that might mean radical change in their life. Radical change, like losing 135 pounds, you know, at 65 years old. That's radical change. You see, the one thing the 12 steps have done for me, this awakened spirit, has allowed me to identify my limiting behaviors. It's allowed me to understand what stops me from getting what I want in the world. And it allows me a process to get through those limiting behaviors so that I can truly get what I desire in my soul. The things I always wanted when I was drinking and doing drugs, but I always thought they were so fleeting. You see, so fleeting. And most people don't really want to be responsible to their soul. We spent so many years trying not to be. We spent so many years trying to say, my God, if it feels uncomfortable, I got to tell my brain to shut the F up. Shut up, don't bother me, I'm doing what I want. No matter how much pain it brought on to us consistently, we would tell our soul to shut up. You see, to me, the spiritual awakening is when I can really listen to what's going on inside of me. When I can listen to my body and I can listen to the things around me, where I can see miracles around me and I can understand that God really is handling the results. That I can do the footwork, but He handles the results. And to me, that's pretty amazing. It's really freeing. It really is. Because for me, it takes a lot of the responsibility off from me. And it just says the only responsibility I've got is planning and taking the first step. Taking the next step. In life, it's just like it is here. We do it one step at a time. You can only do one thing at a time. And so you do the next right thing constantly. It becomes a discipline. You see, one of the things I found out in my life is that a lot of me doesn't... There's a part of me that doesn't like discipline. And I rebel against it. But there's a whole other part of me that really enjoys discipline. You see, that enjoys the working out every day, that enjoys the drama of going to a part-time job with 25-year-olds all over the place, you know, and that discipline of having the repetition makes things comfortable for a lot of people. And when we run up against these limiting behaviors I'm talking about, it becomes very difficult for somebody to break out of that mold and to get what they really desire. Most people sit back and long for something for many years and are too afraid to make a move to get what they want out of life. You know, I thank God for the sponsorship I had in this area of teaching me what I could get out of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of what God really meant in my life. Because, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, homeless, uneducated, been a drug dealer ever since I graduated high school, I wasn't of much value to anybody. I wasn't. And, you know, As I stuck around AA, you people show me that people I thought were worse than me were staying sober. Because by the time I got to AA this time, I didn't believe AA worked. I was just here to heal up and quit bleeding out of places I wasn't supposed to bleed. And as I started to get healthy and started to go to these meetings and started to understand something about AA, you guys started to develop this hope that maybe I could get what you have. Maybe I could. Just maybe. And I thank God all these old-timers didn't sit and pat me on the back and tell me what a great guy I was. They didn't at all. Not a guy like me. They knew if they did that to me, I'd be drinking. And I thank God for the wisdom of those old guys that pissed me off every meeting I went to. They made me angry enough I talked to my sponsor consistently. You see? There's something to that. There's something to that once in a while. Sometimes the best thing you can do is to piss a guy off enough he talks to his sponsor. So, my journey with God has been really interesting here to become to this awakened spirit, and I'm going to talk about it for about 5 minutes. When I got sober, I didn't believe in God, but I wanted to believe in God. And I had that moment I talked about when my brother was murdered and I was in the bathroom and somebody had put cocaine in my pocket and it fell out on the floor, and I had a moment with God at that point, and I threw the cocaine in the toilet. And I got on my knees and said, AA is going to either work or it doesn't, God. And that was where I started. But see, very quickly I come to find out that when I got my sponsor on the phone and hung up, my sponsor made me feel good right away. And even though I was praying and doing all these things, you see, when I was 5 years sober and been going to like 15, 18 meetings a week. I was leading 3 meetings in a night. I was craziness, insanity. My sponsor got murdered. And see, my instant help was gone. And I was around long enough to know if I didn't have God in my life, I was going to drink. Because I'm a real alcoholic. There ain't no doubt about that with me. I drink. And when I drink, I do drunken behavior. And my drunken behavior ain't pretty. You see? For a year and a half, I went to meetings almost every day with tears running down my eyes, knowing I was going to drink. I did everything. I went to priests. I went to University of Chicago and talked to Father John Powell. I went to Father Rich downtown in Cleveland. I really tried to find an answer to this whole thing. And you know what happened? They say, don't quit before the miracle happens. Don't quit. I was sitting in a meeting like this one night, and a lady across the table from me said, you know what? Your sponsor died a hero. She died serving God. She had 38 years of bonus life. You see? I'm coming up on 38 years here pretty soon. Pretty cool things. But that started another relationship with God. That I got to know a God to me that was more personal to me, and I needed to see miracles in other people, and I needed to be able to see God in you, and I needed to see that God was real and that it affected the world, and I had to have that kind of challenge for God. And I found that kind of God for many, many years. You see, for many years I started going to church with my wife. We were married in the church, and it was great. And you know, you think you're so strong, and God starts sending you all these things from the world, you know. And then my wife dies. You see, that's a hard one with God. Because, you know, now I think I'm solid with God and all this stuff, and why me? You know, and I kept hearing from everybody, why not you, you know. But I couldn't accept it, and I grinded on that for a long time, and it really made me isolate myself. Because when I hurt, I push people away. I get quiet. I don't allow anybody to see my pain, because after all, you know who I am. God forbid I could let you see that I'm weak. I can't do that. And so I stayed away from AA for many years because I was embarrassed. Sobriety without AA is terrible. It's the worst. There is nothing worse that I could ever think of in life. Put me in jail, put me anywhere. Sobriety without AA is the worst. It's the worst I could ever think of to live that way. And you know, about 3 years ago, I woke up one day and I just said I'd had enough. The doctors didn't have the answers for me. All their depression pills and all this stuff, blah, 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 blah. You know. I'm a drunk. I'm a drunk. And there's only one answer for a drunk. And the big book says it so clearly. It says it's so... It's in the black part of the book if you haven't read the black part. Too many people want to read that white part, you know? The guy who's got a sponsor that ain't read the big book, and his sponsor ain't read the big book, and the guy's a double know-nothing big book, you know? I mean, if you read the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, when all else fails, what do? Intense work with another alcoholic. Period. It's the only thing it says to do. Imagine that. 164 pages, and one sentence tells us what to do. One sentence gives us our directives. That if we truly have an awakened spirit, if we truly have worked the 11 steps and we're at the 12th step, what are we supposed to do? Practice these principles on all our affairs and help another drunk. So we got to help drunks. You see? We got to help drunks. And I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, you see, I was taught real early on, I got to help drunks, okay? Like, right from like week two, I was sober. I was showing people where coffee pots were and shaking their hands and telling them where the bathrooms were and things like that, which are what a new guy should be doing to make him feel part of it here. because he's got 2 weeks. The other new guy can really tell that he's only got 2 weeks, and he believes the guy's got 2 weeks. He doesn't believe people can stay sober 30 years. You see? Credibility is important here. If you've read the big book, Bill Wilson does everything he can to build credibility in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything he can in that book. The first four chapters are all about building credibility about AA. Because when you get to chapter 5, something happens after the ABCs. Does anybody know what happens after the ABCs? 126 musts. Suggestions, right? Suggestions. Well, so now I'm going to come back to AA and I start going to meetings and I start praying harder and I start realizing that I got a long ways to go and that I'm not really happy with where I'm at and that if I come back to AA full time, I think my life will get better. And I started going to a bunch of meetings. And it didn't get better right away. But I started not feeling so alone anymore. Especially since my boys had moved away. One's in Dallas and one's in Reno. And being retired, it just left me alone too much. And now I come back to AA and I've got something in my life and I'm not feeling right. Because I had gotten old by this point. I'd been retired about 10 years and I let myself get old. And so in AA they tell us if we come back and we want to get better, we got to help others. So I start helping others. I start sponsoring people, doing these things. But I'm not feeling like I'm physically able to go to enough meetings. I find myself being tired to go to a meeting at night when I did nothing all day. You know? And it just, I didn't like it at all. And so I started exercising a little bit. And of course, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I don't do it a little bit. I rip a muscle in my back that took 8 months to repair. But so I finally, during this time of ripping the muscle in my back, I had to be humble enough to say, okay, I'll go to physical therapy for the first time in my life. I was an athlete. I don't need physical therapy. I know what to do. I said, okay, I'll do it. Well, they put me in the swimming pool. Now, being from South Florida, I love the swimming, but up here I haven't done it in so many years. It kind of was like weird, and I was so overweight and so body conscious and so uncomfortable that I almost didn't want to do it. But I did it anyways. And I fell in love. I fell in love with the swimming pool again. I'm there 5-6 days a week now, you see. But it's practicing these principles in all our affairs. I took what AA taught me and I did it a little bit at a time and a little bit at a time and a little bit at a time. And one day at a time, I've lost 135 pounds now. And that might not impress you, but it impresses the hell out of me. Hell, I weigh less than I did in 1991 when I married my wife. So, pretty happy about that. But, practicing these principles in all our affairs. We got 8 minutes to talk about helping others. All right, here we go. I hear too many people sit in a meeting and say, geez, I don't sponsor anybody. That's criminal if you do that. If you don't have somebody you're sponsoring right now, today, why are you here? Are you coming here to take from us? Is that all you're doing? You're thieves still? You got larceny in your heart still? You think you just can come here and take what we have? There's a price to be paid for Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book tells me. You see, I got to give away what I got to keep it. And if I don't give it away, I won't keep it. And if I want to have more room to grow in my life, to expand my life, I got to give it away more. Because I got to empty out everything inside of me so that I can get more. Okay? Now that's scary because, oh, I'm going to take somebody's life in my hands. You know, that's true. About a year ago, last summer, I was sponsoring a young man. His father was a very, very successful man and had a mansion up on the lake in Madison. At this time, the boy was staying in an apartment above his dad's garage. And I picked this guy up and take him to a meeting, and I've been working with him for a few weeks now. And I take him to a meeting, and he seems a little squirrely, and we sit in the driveway of his parents' house afterwards and talk for about 20 minutes. And at 9 o'clock, he gets out of the car and goes in the house, into the upstairs apartment, and I drive home. And see, the next morning, the police are at my door telling me that he was dead by 9:25. You see, that's what we're talking about here. Because every person that walks through this door, that has the courage, that has the pain, the desperation to walk through that door, deserves somebody here to tell them that they're home. Everyone deserves that. And I've seen people walk in here scared to death, sit through a meeting, and walk out the door with not one person talk to them. Because everybody was too busy talking to their friends, talking to their circle clutch, having a good time at AA, which is all important until the new guy walks in the room. You see? Or until somebody's suffering and they walk out with nobody bothering to talk to them because it's not a normal person you talk to. You see, in AA, I was taught very early on that if Alcoholics Anonymous made my life better at all, that I needed to develop a sense of gratitude for that. Now, people go to gratitude meetings all the time, don't they? You won't see me at one. My sponsor told me that gratitude is a verb, it is not it's an action, not a noun. And so how can you talk about something that's an action? Because if you're grateful, somebody ought to be able to look at you and know. They ought to be able to follow you around and see if you're grateful for your sobriety. So if I'm grateful, am I picking up the phone at 3 in the morning when a new guy calls me? Am I asking somebody for their phone number at a meeting every time I see a new guy? Every time, not just once in a while when it's convenient? Am I going out of my way to make sure that I saw a new guy a week ago and I see him in the meeting and I make sure I remember his name so that I can impress him by shaking his hand and saying, "Hey Frank, welcome back today." Do you know what that means to a new guy if you can remember their name and shake their hand a second time? My God, you might save somebody's life. And we take what we do here so unseriously. We're doing God's work here. This is serious business. That's what they taught me. This is important what we do. It's important that we come to these meetings. And if you don't think it's important what I do, call my children. I'll give you their phone numbers and ask them. You see? It's so important to that new man that we're here for him or her. That we're here at any time, any place somebody reaches out their hand. We need to be there, the book says. And I always say that the biggest sins I have today are not my sins that I go out and do. Not the sins. They're the sins of commission where I could have done something and I didn't. Where I could have helped and I didn't. Where I could have gone out of my way for I didn't. Where I hadn't seen a guy at a meeting for 2 or 3 weeks and I didn't reach out to him. And I should have. A home group member's not at the home group. How come they don't get called anymore? In the old days, we'd call anybody that wasn't at the home group meeting. Why? What's going on? It's important you're at your home group. It's important we show the new person discipline. That we show them there's a better way to live. They gotta want what we have. The big book says clearly, you hear it every night in how it works. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So it's our responsibility to show the new guy what we have. To show them that we have something of value. And that we value what we have. Huh. Imagine that. Huh. That it's valuable being sober. You know, AA has been so special to me in everything I do. Because in a minute I can take the 12 steps and work them in my head and change where I'm at right at that moment. Now sometimes I don't do that and I'm a little screwy at times. Okay, I'm a little passionate and you know, you get me on the wrong day and I'm over passionate and people take it the wrong way, you know. But that's okay. I'd rather be that way than sit back in the corner and do nothing and feel like I'm not part of. Okay. I do the best I can in AA today. And I really mean that. I show up. I dress up. I read the book on a daily basis. I say my prayers morning and night. I wanted to say one more thing before I close here about this helping others. I started to and then got off track. Well, I hear people say, boy, nobody's asked me to sponsor them. Right? Nobody's asked me to sponsor them. You hear that all the time, don't you? If you ask somebody or you're sponsoring somebody, well, nobody's asked me. I want to know where that line is in the big book. Where's that line that says nobody's asked me to sponsor them? Is that what Bill Wilson did? Is that what he accepted as his limiting behavior? Nobody asked him? What did he do in the Mayflower Hotel? In a hallway that I've stood in so many times. What did he do there? He was alone. He had emotional pain. And he thought he could find a friend to ease that pain in a bar, didn't he? That was our normal reaction. Bill didn't accept that. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pick up a phone and I'm going to find a drunk to work with because I need it. Because I need it. Why do we help other people? Because we need it, not because of them. If they get drunk, better them than me. You know? If somebody's getting drunk here, it's going to be you, not me. Okay? So, if you have nobody to sponsor, it's your job to find them. Maybe they aren't walking into every meeting you go to. So, what is your job to do? To go out and find a way to be exposed to new people. Does that mean going to a three-quarter way house, a halfway house, a treatment center, going to the bar and recruiting somebody? Hell, I don't know. But it's up to, if you want to stay sober, it's your job to have sponsors and sponsees. It's your job. That's what AA charges us with. And if you're not doing it, you're doing a disservice not only to your community at large, but to yourself. Because there's no better joy than I had just the other night of sitting with a guy that's 32 years sober that I took out of a crack house with his kids dirty and his wife without food and he had his grandchild on his knee. You see, there's no better joy. How much do I owe for that picture? How much does he owe? You see, that's AA. That's AA that I want. You see, we all have our own individual limiting behaviors. Make AA what you want. Make it as happy as you want. Because you can get anything you want here. I have. I've gone beyond my wildest dreams. Man, 2 minutes, I'll be off. I just got to brag about one more thing about AA. When I was 40 years old, I walked away from a six-figure job with 2 children, a big house, and 2 car payments, and scared to death. And I started a little company with $300 and a laser printer. And the people at AA told me I could do it a day at a time, a customer at a time, a minute at a time. And as I was able to take these principles of AA and to open up my business and to grow my business to one of the fastest growing businesses in the country. I was able to make the Fortune 5000 list. Unheard of for a homeless drunk. But the best part of the whole thing was that my dad was still alive. And during this time, there's a company called Ernst & Young, the largest accounting firm in the world. And they do a contest every year called Entrepreneur of the Year. And these are awards that Michael Dell won, Bill Gates won. I mean, this is serious stuff. My dad had the honor of sitting in the audience one night and to see me on stage with 20 other men and to be runner-up for that award. This is a man that used to come and pick me up and wake me up at 8 o'clock in the morning so I could go to a taco job because I couldn't get out of bed. You want to talk about God? You want to talk about me coming driving 60 miles each way to lead a meeting, God forbid? You see, this is all you need to know about AA. I love AA. I love you people for listening to me. You've all been so kind, so generous in listening, and your talks and the things you say to me really have been unbelievable, because most people who listen to me for 7 hours are pretty bored. So, not that I don't like to talk, but I want to thank everybody for being here. Thank you for all your kindness. I hope that maybe I said something that might inspire you to touch another's life or to change yours. I guess it's time for questions.
Thank you, Walt. Any questions from the room or anyone on Zoom? I mean, there's got to be some.
Okay. Well, I guess it was either good or bad. I mean, when I get no comments, you never know.
Walt, I have a couple questions. I really appreciate you driving and your example of driving, 120 miles to a meeting is, the best example of a 12-step that you could give. So thank you very much for doing that for all this time. You were talking about, now I had a couple questions. Were you going to a lot of meetings and participating in AA before your wife died?
Oh yeah, no, I was going to a lot of meetings. Oh yeah.
No, and then your wife passed away, correct?
Yep.
And then
I quit going to meetings.
So what was going on? What was
embarrassment, pain, anger, all kinds of things. I didn't want anybody to see me that weak. I felt weak. And I'm a very, very strong man. And I felt very weak. I felt broken. And I didn't want anybody to see me broken. It wasn't acceptable to me. And, it left me limited for a very long time. I talk about limiting behaviors, man. That was limiting me. Totally. It crushed
me. How long did that period last for you?
Till about a week ago. No, things are much better today. I think a good solid 9 years that I was really not going to hardly any meetings and not being away and trusting the doctors and taking their medication and thinking, oh, it's going to be better this time and this medicine will do it this. And, and I got good doctors. I'm at the clinic. They're doing their best. But I'm an alcoholic. A pill don't fix me. Meetings fix me. So my medicine is here.
Yes, and so it took about 9 years of pain for you to have that realization that, was it like a spiritual experience or awakening to say,
No, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick.
Right.
Okay. I was just sick and tired of it.
Right.
You know, like kind of like before I got sober, I was just sick of everything around me. The only way I could see out was to come back to AA, and maybe you people would accept me back, and maybe you'd let me come to some meetings. Maybe.
Thanks, Walt. Thanks for everything. Really appreciate it.
Thanks again, Walt. Really appreciate your talk, and I related to a lot of it, and appreciate you coming up. Regarding the sponsorship and what you talked about early on, the meeting the new guy at the door and getting a cup of coffee and all that, and you know, that's 12-step work that we can do when we're new. For a guy that's a little bit past that, what stage of the steps you think the sponsor should be kind of saying, you know, now's the time you need to be actively looking for sponsors, for people to sponsor?
Well, it depends on how you work the steps with the guy. I've seen guys that say, well, you got to be on the first step for a year. I've seen it. Now, generally, if I'm going to tell somebody that, that's because the guy's got larceny in his heart, and I know that if I tell him he can't do it, he's going to do it. Okay? But that would be the only time I would say something like that tongue-in-cheek. So, to me, why would I stop anybody from shaking a hand if they're 2 days sober? I stayed sober a day, man. Come on, let's try this together. Make them feel good about themselves. They come in here so devastated that if they can shake somebody's hand and make that other guy see that other guy smile just a little bit, that little bit of feeling that they would get would be so good. And that's what I see. So, I start them there as soon as I can get them to have courage to shake somebody else's hand, you know. Sure.
And then, and a little bit more intensive work with other alcoholics comes, like maybe during the ninth step, or maybe even before that, or just case by case.
It's going to. I believe sponsorship is made in heaven. Okay. That if you show up, you shake enough new people's hands, you will sponsor enough people. And when somebody is ready to be sponsored by you, they'll ask you. Or they'll be kind of like me. I'm the kind of guy that was too hip, slick, and cool to ask somebody to be my sponsor. You see, I was too afraid. I thought it was kind of like asking another guy to go to prom. Kind of uncomfortable. For me, anyways. But, you know, so I understand that, and sometimes I'll see that in somebody's eyes and I'll just say, dude, do you need a sponsor? You okay? You know, and I'll go from there. But let sponsorship happen, but you got to show up. The problem is most people don't show up where new people are. You see? They aren't beating down the doors at this meeting. But I'm sure there's other meetings where there's lots of new people. And so it's our responsibility to be in front of the new people. That's what the book says.
Hi, Walt. Thank you. Everything was wonderful that I heard. So, do you find it unusual to maybe have somebody that you sponsored, well, you might not have this problem, but I have, where they relapsed and maybe they were gone for a couple of years? Do you find it abnormal to text or call a person you haven't seen in a couple of years and say, hey, I really miss seeing you? How do you feel about that?
Well, let me ask you this.
Uh-oh.
If I'm doing the footwork and God's handling the results, what difference does it make if they drink or not? Otherwise, you're playing God. Because you're looking at results. It's not my business whether somebody stays sober or not. I'm going to show up. I'm going to do everything the old timers taught me. I'm going to get them into the book. I'm going to read the book with them. I'm going to work the steps with them. I'm going to make sure they know I care. I'm going to look them in the eye when I talk to them. You see? And I'm going to make sure they know I would go out of my way for them. When they call at 3 in the morning, I answer the phone. Okay? That's what my job is. If they stay sober, great. Many people I sponsor don't stay sober. Many do. And it's okay. I show up and I realize that God handles the results. Because a lot of times when I think somebody's going to stay sober, they get drunk. And a lot of times when I think, God, this guy will never stay sober, and they're the best guys in sobriety I've ever seen. You know? It's just amazing. So I don't judge people no more with sobriety. I've been fooled too many times. I let God do that. You're welcome. Thank you.
Any other questions from the room or anyone from Zoom?
There's one.
Thanks, Walt. Thanks for being here. I missed a few. I've heard a few, but I guess we're here for the big finish. But the thought that was occurring to me was, you know, I have not had a lot of... I've tried appointing myself as someone's sponsor when I thought they needed it, and that didn't work out either. So I think I read somewhere, I can't remember where, so... But what we're tasked to do is to offer the newcomer a fair presentation of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And to just explain the steps and the traditions and what we do in a fair presentation of the program.
Yep.
That doesn't necessarily require me to be a sponsor, does it? I mean, that just means sharing what I've learned.
In fact, now, don't take this wrong now. There are certain people in Alcoholics Anonymous that can't do certain things. Okay, now, my sponsor, George Cern, when he was 5 years sober, he had never led a meeting. Okay? And he called me up one day and said, Walt, I got to lead a meeting tonight, and I don't think I can. He said, you need to come and pick me up and take me to the meeting so I make sure I show up. You see? Now, did that make him a bad man or a bad sponsor or not helping me? No way, because he intensively worked with other alcoholics. So you don't necessarily have to be a sponsor, but you got to be around new people. If you're avoiding new people and only going to meetings where no new people don't come, it's awful easy to say, boy, nobody's here, so I'm not helping. It gets really comfortable to do that because it's a sacrifice to help a new person.
No, I get that, you know, we owe. You know, someone spent time with me, and the way to say thank you is to spend time on the next person who needs some direction. I mean, I'll just say that one of the things that I do, for good or for ill, is I just send daily texts and leave the door open. I don't care if you're
Absolutely.
Drunk or whatever. You know, who knows when the day is that it's going to click in.
Yep, we love others and help others, and we just try to show up.
Okay.
If you can be available, that's the biggest thing we can do, is to make ourselves available if they want what we have.
Okay, because
does that make sense?
Yeah, I can't want it more than they do. So
I've tried beating people into sobriety. I've tried conning people into sobriety. I've done a lot of things, and it don't work. They gotta want what we have. It's so important that we understand that it's our job to show them what we have and to be the type of person that they want what we have. To not be just a mess. You know? To be our best we can be, because everybody has a different best. You're welcome.
Thanks again, Walt. And someone on Zoom have a question?
Okay.
Excuse me,
Cynthia on Zoom has her hand up.
Yeah, go ahead and unmute yourself, Cynthia. Fire away.
You're muted. There you go.
There we go. I got it.
Hey, Cindy.
Hey, I'm Cindy and I have the disease of addiction. It's not so much a question. Well, thank you for your service. And thank you for the people who are hosting and making the meeting happen.
She's my sister-in-law.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've called at 3 o'clock in the morning and you haven't picked up.
Take it personally.
I just want to say, I love you so much. You are the most amazing person. you are an exemplary in sobriety, and I want what you have, and I just need to acknowledge that, you know, when you talk about your wife, my sister, I love you for taking such good care of her and for taking care of those boys who have grown into amazing men. And that's you, Walt. That's you and your commitment to Terry, to the boy, and to your sobriety. And I adore you. I do.
Love you, Cindy.
Thanks for letting me share.
Love you, Cindy.
I love you too.
Thanks, Cindy. Before
a round of applause for Walt, we have a little departing gift that